You're listening to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. On this show, Chris and I are joined by Neil Russell from Raith Rovers. It'll become apparent early on just how much Neil loves the club. We covered a whole host of things, including their fundraising efforts, the army of fans who lend their expertise on a regular basis, their matchday app, and Raith TV. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. I'm Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland, and as ever, I'm with Michael Bokel, the Scottish FA's Digital Manager. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Chris.
How are you getting on? Good?
Yeah, good. Busy. And you?
Same as ever, yeah. I think people are not really starting to book flights yet, but still busy as ever at Skyscanner, so can't complain there. So far, during lockdown, we've brought you 9 podcasts covering a host of different topics, including live streaming and being creative. Hopefully you've had a chance to listen to all of them by now, but if you haven't, then I would obviously thoroughly recommend that you do. We've also had the Power of Football podcast launched with Danny Bisland, and I'd encourage everybody to listen to those if you haven't already too. They really dive deep into what makes Scottish football so special, something we've touched on as well in previous episodes when Danny's been on. We've also spoken to Nathan Thompson and took a look inside Berwick Rangers. Today's podcast is along similar lines, isn't it, Michael, with Neil Russell from Raith Rovers?
Yeah, look, Raith Rovers are another club that we've mentioned a few times on the podcast. There seems to be a few, and like with the others that we have done, we decided that it would be good to get them on. And look, fans have got behind, not just in lockdown with the club, but they spent a bit of money before as well, and it'd be interesting to find out more about that and more about some of the great activity that they have been doing, which they across a number of different things, and hopefully Neil will be able to answer a question on it.
Definitely, yeah. Neil, welcome to the podcast.
Hi guys, hi Chris and Michael. Good to speak to you at last. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, we are as well. Let's just get straight into it then. Introduce us to yourself and a bit about your background, first of all.
Well, as you said with your introduction, my name's Neil Russell. I've been supporting the Rovers all my life. And all the time that I've been interested in football, I've supported Raith Rovers. I went to my first game just after Christmas in 1979 with my granddad, and he'd been going to the Rovers since the season we set the British goal scoring record in 1938. So he'd seen it all. He'd seen huge crowds, small crowds, big wins, big losses, promotions, relegations, the whole lot.
Where does that lead to then, taking us to the current day when you've managed to get a role at Raith, and talk us through what your role is currently at the club?
And then by the time the new century came around, I was living away from Scotland. I was in London, and when I came back to Scotland in 2005, just before I got married, obviously the first thing that I sorted out after renting a flat in Edinburgh with my fiance, now my wife, was a Rovers season ticket. You know, I thought, well, this is great. I can go to the Rovers every week now. And I did. From 2005 onwards, I went to every game I could, home and a good few away games as well. It quickly transpired that the Rovers were looking for help in different areas. And so fast forward it to around about 2014, the season we won the Ramsden's Cup. I was still a supporter, and there had been a revamp of the club website, and we'd started doing things a lot differently to get us to where we are now in terms of match day output, you know, like live updates and the likes were being done from people from a smartphone to go directly onto the website and social media. So with this revamp of the website, I was asked if I could coordinate the match day output, you know, making sure we had an updater, somebody to write the report, the match report for the website, making sure that the photographer was in place and all that sort of thing. So it became a sort of coordinator role, and I dipped in and I helped all the different roles at the time, mainly match day up, you know, match updates. So I got my I got involved in the Rovers through a director, the supporter director at the time, a gentleman called Tom Phillips, who I'm still friendly with. So Tom Phillips was our supporter director on the board, and he wanted to get people into the act of volunteering and helping the club, helping the club do what the club wanted to do. So there was myself and a guy called Davey Hancock and Neil Ingebrigtsen. So people who I'm still involved with, I still deal with and work with at Rovers to this day. And that's how I got involved, 2014. I've been the media officer. I got an official role in 2016. And I became the media officer in 2016, which I am still doing to this day. And on match days, I commentate for Wraith TV and away from the stadium, I administer the Wraith Supporters Fund, the fundraising vehicle that was set up revamped a year and a bit ago to gather funds for the team. I was also on the board of the Wraith Trust with my brother Alan and another good friend of ours, Steve Wallace and Steve Lawther and James Proctor. With the media officer thing, I got offered to shadow the existing media officer, Ali Gourley, when he was diagnosed with a terminal illness. Whilst I was grateful for the opportunity, it was tinged with, sadness, regret that, it was at somebody else's misfortune had caused me to eventually become the media officer. And so Ali Gourley, who was the media officer, he'd been involved volunteering the Rovers since the early 80s. He used to help at training and put the cones out and help the kit man, and all the players knew him. And if you're looking at volunteers at the Rovers, and the most high profile volunteer, it was definitely Ali Gourley, because everybody knew him. He knew everyone. He knew his history of the club inside out, back to front, and all the rest of it. I mean, so to be asked by him if I could take over when he was no longer capable of coming to games, it was a big honour, but it was a big job. But I was happy to do it. It was a challenge. It was different. Ali sadly passed away in the 2015-16 season. At Rovers, in recent years, we have referred to seasons as the name of the manager, because until John McGlynn, we had managers that lasted a season or a season and a bit. So the Ray McKinnon season, when we got to the Premiership playoffs, was when Ali passed away, and I got fully ingrained into the role of media officer. So it's been interesting since then, generally.
Definitely, yeah, it definitely sounds like it anyway. And how important would you say volunteers are then, and how many are actually involved behind the scenes at the club?
Well, in many ways, you can't overstate the importance of volunteers at a club like Wraith Rovers. I liaise with another volunteer to get the numbers on this. So a guy called Bill Gilby, who is the programme editor, and also a friend, a Rovers friend of mine that I made when I was living in London. And, I became friends with him when I moved to London, and I realised nobody else knew who Wraith Rovers were, so I looked out this guy, Bill Gilby, and he counted up, how many Rovers volunteers there are, and there is between 80 and 100 people that help the club out of the goodness of that, out of enthusiasm and love for the club, whether that's on a match day or through the week, and doing everything from, doing all sorts of jobs. You asked the importance of volunteers. I don't think the importance of volunteers in any organisation can be stressed enough. The feeling that you get doing your bit to help your club out, whether that's selling programmes, running the Rory Club for our younger supporters, it's a powerful draw for volunteers that are able to help out. And if you put that number in context, let's go with 80 or 85 volunteers. Outside of playing, coaching, kit man and medical staff at the Rovers, there's only 6 full-time equivalent staff at Wraith Rovers outside of the actual football that we go to watch. So there's an office staff of 4, There's two ladies that share the laundry duties, and there's two guys that are on the ground staff, doing stadium maintenance, So our payroll is all focused on the playing side and coaching side. Outside of that, a lot of things are done by volunteers. So I would say in that context, volunteers are a huge part of Raith Rovers, very much so.
How do you prioritize what you focus on, Neil? Like, obviously there's a lot of volunteers. How does that all come together?
Well, how do you prioritize what to focus on? Well, I would say it's an almost impossible task to prioritize one thing over another. At our level of football, supporters of the club are the lifeblood, because and we've seen that in recent weeks, the talk of, if there's no games on, how do we make money? It's not like the English Premiership where they've got multi-million broadcasting deals, to the extent that your big clubs down south, they almost don't, they can almost do without, or they don't need people through the gate, for their turnover. At our level of football, it's, as I'm sure you're aware, it's totally different. So if we look at fans as the lifeblood of the clubs, fans' perception of the club and what the club is doing plays a major part in where our focus falls. So my early involvement at the Rovers as a volunteer was with Raith TV. And amongst the Raith TV volunteers, we still say it to this day, if no one comments on what we've done, then it's the same as winning an Oscar. It's only when things go wrong that people chip in and have an opinion a lot of the time. So we take the view that if it's supporter focused, then that's the priority. In general terms, I mean, there's obviously exceptions to that. And if we do things that show the club in a positive light to the community, and to the fans, then all the better for us. So I'd say that's the answer to that one.
I was just going to say, you mentioned there about being supporter focused. I mean, one of the things you've done fairly recently was a supporter survey. How did you go about that, and what did the survey tell you?
Well, the support of the survey was is done every year. I don't, off the top of my head, I can't remember how many years we've been doing it, but when I was on the Raith Trust Board, we were doing an annual survey, and there'd certainly been ones before I was on the boards. I think 9 or 10 years plus we've been doing support survey. They're organised by the Raith Trust, and it's Stephen Lowther from the Raith Trust Board who puts that survey out every year. I mean, this year's one, the results, they were fed back to the club, and the thing that stuck out was that pricing is the thing that people have the strongest views on. They felt the season ticket pricing was fair, but the junior season tickets need to be a lot cheaper. And so the trust, in particular, are working with the club to try and find ways to get the pricing for junior season ticket holders down. So in recent years, the trust made an investment in the club so that we could offer cut price junior season tickets. So I mean, it's the age old thing. People always have a view on whether something's too expensive or not, and football's no different. With that survey though, the majority of fans, 88%, believe that the Rovers are as a club are heading in the right direction in terms of engaging with the fans, the communication, and the fact they're more transparent. Our fans seem to like the idea that we've developed positive initiatives like Raith TV, the Rory Club, and the Supporters Fund. They appreciate the fact we've attempted to live within our means, whilst trying to be more commercial, and that we've got people in charge with the best interests of the club at heart. And on top of that, my own personal take on that trust survey and the things that the wider support have come out with is that the stock of the club within the community and the fan base and the people running the club is higher than it's been for a good long while. So it's taken a while, but we've got a good mix at board level and at management level, the management of the team. You've got to be happy with a team that is top of the league 21 out of 28 games and ends up winning the league title. So the feel-good factor is you know, it's returning gradually. It's a nice place to be a lot of the time.
That's good. I think that obviously as media officer, how do you then take that further and look to get even more coverage in the local press and then even taking it up a notch again into the national media?
Well, basically, the strategy at Rovers when it comes to communications and gaining media attention is that we try and be innovative in the things that we do. So, like the content we put out during the lockdown, we try to do something a little bit different. We can't be unique and leading the pack in everything we do, but we try to be ahead of the game and think outside the box a little bit, to use a phrase that I don't particularly like. We don't want to be afraid of trying things that are different, like the Matchday app. So our Matchday app, which you were asked about in a later question, was something that no other club in Scotland have or had at any point. So we're rightly quite proud of that. With regards to media coverage, how do we get it out to the world? Well, with every major announcement, you know, on players joining, players leaving, statements by the board, obviously a big thing at this point in time, everything we do that needs to go into the media, it goes out across three major channels: social media, club website, and out to the press list by email of nearly 50 journalists, you know, local and national. And obviously they're timed to go out at exactly the same time. And if we have major announcements that justify it, we also try and back it up either at the same time or shortly after with a video interview with the chairman, manager, or player, whatever, you know, whatever the scenario or whatever the story is. So I think it's about being, you've got to be sort of unashamed to some extent and put your story out there. You can't just put it on the website or social media and hope that the journalists will notice it. You know, lots of journalists, they get their stories from social media in the first instance, but if you point them towards it, you know, then it can help your cause. And we've had stories taken up by national papers sometimes where we didn't really expect it to, because we basically pushed it in their direction and made it easy for them. So that's the general strategy, yes.
And when it comes to with your fans, Neil, one of the things I've noticed from Raith Rovers is the Rovers Review Bulletin, and it's quite regular. How often does that go out, and what do you look to achieve from putting that out?
The Rovers Review Bulletin is a new thing brought around by the lockdown. It goes out. The bulletin is essentially the matchday programme in terms of its style and content. It's all the things you'd find in a matchday programme, but the difference is it comes out every week, not every second week when there's a home game. It was an innovation of our program editor, Bill Gilby, who wanted just another stream of information going out to supporters and people interested in football generally to find out what's going on at the Rovers. And over the course of lockdown, I mean, before lockdown started, Bill was always looking for new ideas for the program and now the bulletin. And one of his major coups was getting a player to write a regular feature in the programme. And that player was, you know, everyone's favourite Rovers player at the moment, Lewis Vaughan. He's had great misfortune because of injuries over the last three to four years. But he's our most talented player, arguably our most talented player. And Bill persuaded him to put a few words down every week and they would appear in the bulletin. So you find out from Lewis Vaughan, you know, how his rehab's going, what he's been doing to occupy himself in lockdown, all those things that, you know, you presume are happening for a professional footballer, but you don't get to hear about it regularly unless they do a media interview. So that's been different and interesting, and the supporters are engaged with it. They like hearing what Lou's got to say at the best of times.
How have you been finding lockdown, Neil, in terms of output for the club and some of the things? I know, for example, it's not a new thing, but you've done a lot of Q&As. Have you been finding that certain content's been working better for you?
Well, yeah. At the start of lockdown, there was a realization that, oh heck, you know, what are we going to be able to write about and put out social media stuff about, you know, if there's no matches? Thankfully, because of the size of our volunteer base, the social media side, the volunteers there, there are four or five of us that are able to put things out onto social media. So not only the fact that you've got many more hands to do the work, you've got many more heads to do the thinking of what would be a good idea. And in that sense, on the social media side, it was one of our newer volunteers, well, say newer, year and a bit, so Blair Hopcroft has been involved on the social media side, and he came out with the thought of the Q&As. So in the style of the Q&A that you see in the Matchday programme every week, he was saying, well, you know, social media, we can gather questions from supporters using Google Docs. We've got contact details for every player currently, and most of our ex-players, through myself and John Greer at the former Players Association, who took over from Ali Gourley. That was one of his jobs as well. Let's gather questions from the supporters and put them out. So it was, I mean, as I think you said, there's been 50 Q&As. We're about to do our 51st. I think our 51st one goes out next week. Or did our 51st one go out last week? But Blair has he's managed that superbly. And he was saying that it became a bit of a labour of love at times, but once he got into the groove of it, you know, it was good to get players talking about the good times, because we started off with the current squad. And once we'd done the 20-plus players in our current squad, we could have stopped then, but then we did all the notable former players from recent years, from the Coca-Cola Cup era. We even did our former manager, Antonio Calderon, who's now living back in Spain, where he's from, and a lot of the Spanish guys that he brought over during that league-winning campaign. And a lot of the players, it was their first chance in years to talk about football and the football that they played with the Rovers. Some of the former players ended up touching base with each other. So the Spanish guys hadn't heard from the Scottish ones for a while. And they keep in contact now. So it ranged from everything from legends of the Rovers, doing Q&As, like Gregory Taddy, who was everyone's favourite player 10 years ago, to some of the lesser known names who people were like, oh yeah, that guy, I wondered what happened to him. So yeah, that helped a lot. Having those Q&As really helped fill the gap in lockdown, and the supporters enjoyed it. And sometimes the same questions got asked a lot, but it just shows you that people were keen to hear what the players thought of their time at the Rovers and what they thought of the club and the fans and the manager at the time, who's now our manager again, John McGlynn. So it's all good there. And then from a Ray TV point of view, sharing onto social media the links for classic matches, that helped as well. So once the Q&As got going, you know, different other things just came out of it. You know, like people that wanted to see strip designs from the past. So another idea of Blair Hopcroft's, you know, Wallpaper Wednesdays. He did Wallpaper Wednesdays for people's smartphones, where you could download a classic shirt from our past, from the last 20-plus years, and make that as your screensaver on your smartphone. So the ideas seemed to just come to the volunteer base of things that we could do to fill the time during lockdown. It wasn't too stressful. Well, I don't think it was, anyway, not for me, but others might disagree.
Neil, another of the aspects that we've found you doing during lockdown is kind of throwing the club into fundraising as well, whether that's been through Donate a Ticket or back in some of the fan-led efforts as well. How important has that been to do for the club, and why did you look to get involved in something like Donate a Ticket as well?
All right, yeah, this is a good question. I mean, well, fundraising, as I said before, at our level of football, where money through the turnstiles is the lifeblood of the actual club itself, we saw that it was massively important that we somehow try and fill the gap of no income with fundraising. And I think, to our credit, one of our directors, Andy Milne, so we have on our board, on the Wraith Rovers board, we have a director who is elected onto the board by the supporters. That election takes place every 3 years. Andy Mill is in his second year, might be his third year of being the director. Anyway, he was given responsibility for coordinating that fundraising. And to his credit, he didn't hang around. As soon as the lockdown was announced, he put in motion the Just Giving page. So he set up the Just Giving page with, I think it was a £25,000 target. He didn't want to go too high and say, we need, I don't know, 100 grand straight up, because people would look at that and go, blimey, you know, how are we ever going to do that? So incrementally, he raised the target from 25. So he set 25,000 as the target, and we achieved that in just over a week, I think it was. So then we changed the target again to 50,000, and that was achieved. We've now, in the last 4 or 5 days, in the last week, raised the target to £100,000 on the crowdfunding. So there's a Just Giving page. The Just Giving page was a massive part of that. Off the back of that, Donate a Ticket was started up. Donate a Ticket, for those that don't know, it's where you put the cost of what you would spend on a match day ticket at the turnstile into a website, specially set up, and you put it into your club on there, and the money goes direct to your club. So during the postponement of fixtures, those final eight games, every week when we were playing Dumbarton, Falkirk on the last day, Montrose and whoever else, rather than fans paying their money at the turnstile because there was no game on, they were encouraged to donate a ticket online. And we set it at the same pricing levels for adults, kids and concessions that we do on the turnstiles here. So people felt they were doing something for the club whilst they couldn't be at the games. That donate a ticket thing is a massive thing. It's such a simple thing. It was developed by a Rovers fan called Rory Kilgour. And Rory Kilgour, his surname is well known amongst the Rovers support because his dad was the commercial manager when I started going to the Rovers in the 80s, Alex Kilgour. And he had some, as a commercial manager of the Rovers, he had some innovative ideas. And his son, Rory, took this idea and this thinking to donate a ticket. So we were doing donate a ticket for the postponed matches. Then the season ended, you know, naturally the fixtures had all played out, as it were, or not, because of the postponement. And then donate a ticket then evolved into a Scottish Cup competition. So Rovers were drawn against different teams at all levels of the football pyramid, and it was the amount that you raised for your team that dictated what the score was. So we were actually put out of the Scottish Cup at the weekend there by Beath from the Ayrshire Juniors. They had a massive fundraising run on the go, and they beat us by 12 tickets to get into the, I think, the quarterfinal of the Scottish Cup. And donate a ticket was so straightforward and so beneficial to clubs. And there was over 100 clubs in there, because you had women's teams, you had juniors, you had Lowland League, East of Scotland League, Highland League teams, and also SPFL teams. There wasn't many teams above our level did it, and we couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand why the likes of, Dunfermline, for instance, who have well-publicised cash challenges, like the rest of Scottish football, why they didn't get involved. But bottom line is, Rovers, our current total on donated ticket stands at over £15,000. And that's just from fans playing little games against each other, raising money for their club. Rather than just sticking their money into a pot, they're using it to measure themselves against other clubs. So a lot of credit goes to Rory Kilgour for that.
I think just on donate a ticket, I would recommend listening to the Burst Ball podcast, and Rory's on that and explains a bit more around how Donate a Ticket came about and what the plans are for it going forward. And there's some interesting stuff happening, and he speaks candidly on the podcast about the struggle, the surprise a little bit about the lack of championship and above club getting involved. But as you say, for Raith Rovers and many others, it's been a welcome injection of cash. So, but look, from your point of view, like, fundraising has not just been done during lockdown. You guys have done quite a fair bit in regard to this before, things like festivals, etc., haven't you? I mean, can you give us some examples of some other stuff you've done?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I think I mentioned the Raith Supporters Fund earlier in one of my earlier answers. We had a thing called the Player Development Fund that was introduced in 2016 by the former Supporters Director, Dave Wan. And that was a thing, the take-up was okay in it, but it wasn't fantastic. July of last year, the guy who's now our match day coordinator, Ali Moore, who at that time was invited to be on he was on the board of the football club as well. So the guy round about age with myself, a wee bit younger, sorry, he'll hate me for that. He was brought into the board at the request of the club owner, John Sim. And one of the things he did, in conjunction with Andy Mill, the current supporters director, was revamp the Player Development Fund, and we called it the Raith Supporters Fund. The Player Development Fund had been set up to help fund the cost of the young apprentices, the young players. But the Raith Supporters Fund, the rebranded version, was to help, you know, to help fund all levels of the playing staff, from young through to the experienced. And we really hit it hard. We really pushed it hard. The Player Development Fund had just under 100 contributors, I think. The Raith Supporters Fund, we're now at 320 contributors. So that's 320 people who are putting in at least £10 every month. Since July of last year, it's been bringing in £5,500 every single month, which goes into to offset the cost of wages. So that's a huge thing, you know. And in lockdown, people put extra in, you know, people up their standing orders. They put in one-off contributions into it. One guy put in £1,000 twice to the Raith Supporters Fund. So very gratefully received. Outside of that, the things you mentioned to raise funds, throughout the year, there's been eBay auctions of different bits of memorabilia. One of the main groups of people that have done eBay auctions have been Rovers Down South. So a group that I was involved with in its infancy when I moved to London, and is now run by Jeff McDonald and Graham Gilby, amongst others. There's quite a lot of them involved in the running of that. They would habitually get signed classic tops like Sammy Kufour's jersey, who played for Bayern Munich against the Rovers. Way back when, signed shirts from cup finals, Ramses Cup final, Coca-Cola Cup final, and they would put them on eBay for auction and then donate the proceeds back to the club. So that you know, those online auctions seem to become the niche of Rovers Down South. And the Sammy Kufour one was done by another person. It was done by the guy who used to run the Novar Bar in Kirkcaldy, a popular Rovers pub, a guy called Joe McCluskey. He had Sammy Kufour's jersey. Outside of auctions, I think it's been going on for years now, is the supporter tiles. So in our south stand, there's a wall of blue tiles that you can have your name and photo engraved onto, £30 a time, and it leaves a lasting tribute to you or your loved ones that you did it in name of, in memory of, up on the wall in the home stand. A Rovers supporter that I've known for 30 plus years, Gavin Quinney, everyone calls him, he he's been running that supporter tile thing for years. And in lockdown, he did another round of supporter tiles and was able to give a three-figure sum to the club. So all these little things, people just come up with these ideas and run with them. And that's the thing I like about the Rovers. If somebody has an idea, then unless it's completely unworkable or unfeasible, they will usually get a chance to implement their idea and see if it works. And I think that that's a credit to Raith Rovers as well. You know, we take the approach, or Raith Rovers take the approach, that if it's not been done before, don't worry. We'll give it a try and see if it does work. If it doesn't work, well, it's a lesson learned. So I like the boldness that's been, and the innovativeness that's been shown by the supporters and the club over the years.
No, I definitely agree with that as well. I think it's something that I would like to see other clubs take much more notice of and do themselves, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I always, when I first got involved in volunteering, I'm not going to name any names here, but I would sometimes be in discussions or meetings with people, and an idea was put forward by somebody else, not by me. You know, I tend to sit back and listen. But ideas would come put forward. There would always be someone. It wasn't always the same person. There would always be someone who would say, "Oh, no, we tried that years ago. It didn't work." I said, "Okay," but I thought to myself, that doesn't mean you can't try it again and do it slightly differently or better and make it work that way. Again, there's that fear of doing something that they didn't think might work. You've got to be open-minded about these things, or else you'll never make any progress. And be positive as well. I mean, I dislike negativity when it's associated with Scottish football, because I find there's too much of it around. And there's so much more to be positive about. And I particularly dislike the negativity when it's applied to the Rovers just because, oh, it's the Rovers, it'll never work, or, well, same old Rovers, they won't be able to do that. Try it. You know, be bold, be innovative. You know, grasp the wheel, take the bull by the horns. You never know what will happen. If that makes sense.
It definitely does, yeah, definitely. One of the other things, just following on from some of that fundraising, and obviously a key time to drive revenues for the club, is the recent launch of the home kit. How important was it to get that out at the moment for fans to snap up? And was the launch any different to any previous ones of other years?
Yeah. Well, I would say that new strip time is always hugely important, because so many fans of all ages really look forward to the new strip. Firstly, because it promotes engagement with the club. You know, kids want to wear the new strip to show that they support their club. It's also a revenue driver as well. Let's not hide behind the fact that, you know, we sell strips to our supporters to make some money. You know, it's a business after all. This time around, it was a new manufacturer. Everyone knew that it was a new manufacturer, because we were going over to Joma, and we'd been with Puma Genesis for 13 years. So it was hugely important. And then obviously people know what Joma's kits are like, because there's current, East Fife are in Joma. I think Dumbarton were wearing Joma, amongst many others across all levels of Scottish football. So we knew what kind of kit to expect potentially. So there's a big buzz about that. The fact that it happened in lockdown made it challenging, because in recent years, so start of last season, we had a new strip came out, it was a new home strip, and we did that we had a launch event in the Raith Suite at the stadium, where we had two of our first team and two of the women's first team walk out from behind the screen wearing wearing the new strip, and it was the first time that anyone had seen it. I mean, I hadn't even seen it until that point. And the Raith Suite was absolutely packed out, because folk wanted to see what it was actually like. And we were selling it at the same time. And, you know, that strip flew off the shelves quite quickly. This time around, obviously, we're in lockdown. You couldn't do any sort of mass gathering. So we had to do an online launch. So it took away from the specialness of it. There's no doubt about that. But the fact it was so widely looked forward to when it was unveiled on our website, and again, I think I got a look at it an hour before it was shown to the rest of the fans, my first reaction was, that's quite nice, you know. I mean, I'm not madly into football strips myself. I never get a chance to wear them anymore because I wear shirt and tie at the Rovers matches. And because of a hip injury, I've not played football for over a year now. So I never get a chance to wear football tops. But I looked at it and I thought, I would actually buy that because it's the Joma design. It's got a V on it, which is very different for us. It's two shades of blue. And it was accepted well. It was accepted very well. We've sold over 500 kits now, 500 shirts in total, which is our best ever start to our strip launch in over a decade, easily. And I was talking last night with our commercial manager. So our commercial manager, Laura Andreucci, she's been with the club, I think, 8 or 9 years now. And she was taken aback by how quickly the orders came in for this strip. Bear in mind, this is a strip that we don't get our hands on until July. And so we can't send it out to supporters that have paid for it until July. Just from looking at the images, enough people wanted to buy it, which gave us a good feeling about it, that it was going to be well received. So, so the move to Joma has been good.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a lot of that have gone to Joma, and seems to be some very interesting kits out there as well. Just jumping back a step, you said you volunteered for Rave TV, and I'm guessing it's probably changed slightly since you first joined. What is the setup of Rave TV, and how is it managed from your end?
So the guy that set up Rave TV is my friend and colleague Neil Ingebrigtsen. He's our tortured evil genius. We jokingly refer to him. He's the man that assembles the Rave TV equipment every home game and disassembles it and stresses out when things go wrong sometimes. He didn't even like football until 2008, but he was the chairman of VRN, Victoria Radio Network, which is the hospital radio station. Our initial... So Raith Rovers' initial match commentaries in the early days, 2008, were broadcast live to people who were in hospital, in the local hospital. And Neil, who set up that system, was just going to hand the laptop over to our two commentators, two guys called Mark and Brian, who are now doing other things to fill their spare time. But he was going to hand the laptop over to them and then leave them to it. They asked that he stay and help, just in case the laptop crashed or there was a technical problem. And so Neil, who doesn't even like football, has been coming to every Rovers game, every Rovers home game, for the last 12 years. He's become a Rovers fan. And the system has evolved very much since then. So it was audio only to hospital patients in the early days. But in 2012... the guys started doing live audio-only streaming to see if there was a demand for live coverage, because we noticed that the likes of Pars and Falkirk were doing live streaming and they were charging money for it. They weren't making fortunes, but they were charging money and they were getting the word out, getting the coverage of their games out to supporters who couldn't be at the games. And we wanted to tap into that market, you know, Rovers fans who live abroad and want to listen to what's going on, or Rovers fans that live in Scotland and can't make it to games for whatever reasons. So 2012, we started doing audio-only streaming. And at that point, it was on a website, and Neil Ingebrigtsen installed a chat feature on the webpage so the listeners could interact with each other and the commentators. At that point, we changed the name a little bit to call it, and we rebranded it as Raith Rovers Abroad, because we saw it as keeping people from abroad mainly connected with the club. And that name lasted for a couple of years, until it became clear that people looked at the name and assumed it was some sort of supporters club or supporters group. So at that point, when it was Raith Rovers Abroad, we still had the local college filming the games for highlights and editing, you know, 90 minutes down into a 10 minute segment to show on our website. And it was, like I said, students from Adam Smith College in Kirkcaldy that were brought in to do that. In the last year of them doing that and the club taking control, if you like, of filming and editing and highlights, the last two students that did it, Stephen Ward and Lyle Kilbane, who were Rovers fans anyway, not all the students were, but they were, they became our regular camera operators. So we went from having like several different cameramen every season, you know, whoever was doing whatever for their coursework, that we had Stephen and Lyle doing the filming and the editing between them. And because we had consistency of those two guys, the editing, you know, stepped up a gear, the editing got a bit smarter and better, better use of graphics and all the rest of it. So that was where Ray TV kind of really started coming into its own. In 2013-14, we took the plunge and we started doing live video broadcasts of all home matches. So we talked about it endlessly, it seemed, leading up to that point. And we thought we'd take the plunge because, again, the likes of Falkirk and the Pars, with, you know, slightly bigger fan base than ours, they were doing live video out to people who didn't live in the UK. So we thought, well, let's get in on this. And we started doing live video, live pictures. I don't know if you know the setup of Starks Park, but the commentary point, the press box, is in the main stand behind the dugouts. And on the other side of the pitch is the TV gantry. So that's all fine and well if you're just recording a game to edit down into highlights. But if you're live streaming, you've either got to have all your commentators beside the cameraman on the gantry and there's not enough space, or you've got to find a way of beaming the camera signal from one side of a football pitch to another. So the thing we came up with, now you could run a cable, but that cable would have to either go overhead, which wouldn't be allowed, or round the pitch, and then the cable would be too long. So this, we laugh about it now, but the solution that Neil Ingebrigtsen, now remember I said tortured evil technical genius earlier? The system he came up with was wireless. He invested in two basic wireless transmitters and receivers, and we beamed the signal across the pitch from one side to the other. And you should have seen there's a little black box with an aerial sticking out of it and tin foil in a screen around the back of it so the signal would go in the right direction. And it worked. I mean, we did three seasons. Yeah. We did, I think, three seasons at least of live video, live pictures out to people who didn't live in the UK or Ireland that way, and it worked really well. That all changed. Yeah, we did that for two seasons. That all changed in 2015 when we still had the grass pitch. The guy who is our major shareholder and who, in fact, owns the stadium, John Sim, he agreed to our request to lay a cable between, you know, across the pitch, you know, from one touchline to another. Obviously, you can't lay it on the pitch. So he had a massive trench dug across the halfway line, and there's a underground cable links the camera to the laptop. So that improved the quality of picture. And we've not failed to broadcast a home game for 7 years now, which is something that we're very proud of. Because at the end of the day, it keeps people who don't live in Scotland in the picture as to what's happening at the Rovers. You know, they get the live pictures, they get our commentary over the top of it, which I think they seem to enjoy. We've never had any negative feedback, or not much anyway. So that was home games. We had it licked with home games. We were broadcasting all our home games live on video.
Neil, talking about games, can you just... obviously, hopefully, we're all hoping one day that we can get back to the stadium. But talking of that, can you take us through what the match day app was? We did mention that earlier on, and how did that come about? Because it is something a little bit different, isn't it, as you said?
Yeah, totally. Just a final footnote about Array TV, and then I'll get onto the Match Day app, is that once we were doing everything, home games, audio and video coverage, we thought this is too straightforward. Let's try and do it with away games as well. So we did. We repurposed an old Samsung Galaxy phone, and using a Samsung Galaxy phone and a broadcasting app, we provide audio-only commentary of away games as well. So in the last 2 years, every single game that the Rovers have played, every single competitive first team game the Rovers have played has been covered by audio-only commentary or audio commentary with video as well. So, Ray TV viewers, subscribers are getting value for money there. And it's the thing that we're most proud of, the fact we've got constant coverage. To answer your question about the Match Day app, how does it come around? Match Day app, it's a smartphone app that supporters can use to play games on. There's shoot the ball into the goal and Wraith Raiders. There's two games on there that people can play. It's on Google and it's on the Apple Store. If you just type in Wraith Rovers app, you should be able to find it. So it's a smart thing with some neat little games that kids and adults can play. It's different from what any other club in Scotland is doing because it also has match day interactivity, if you like, whereby supporters who are at the game can pick the man of the match. They can predict the score, the result, the timing of the first sub and who the first sub is going to be. Now, you could do that on any smartphone app, but the way in which ours is different is that you have to check into the stadium, and you can only do those things if you're actually at the game. We want to make it something that's unique and usable for people who are actually at the games. And so on games where there's not a match sponsor, we can have the app users choosing the man of the match. And that's gone down really well because it generates interest in the crowd. Like, who do you think's played the best today? I'm going to vote for Louis Vaughan. Oh, I'm going to vote for Regan Hendry. And you see interesting results on what the supporters perceive as being the man of the match. The app itself, it came about from a Rovers fan who is the CEO of Tag Games, a guy called Paul Farley. And Paul Farley, as a Rovers supporter and CEO of Tag Games, who are based in Dundee, he got involved when we were doing a thing to be the shirt sponsor. So companies and individuals, charities and whatever, could buy a raffle ticket, essentially, and have a chance of being the back-of-shirt sponsor. We've got Val McDermott as our main shirt sponsor on our home kit, but also on the back of our kits, Cars, Flour Mill, Bacardi is the back-of-shirt sponsor, and we offered the opportunity for the winner to become become the front shirt sponsor of the away shirt. And Paul Farley of Tag Games won that raffle, and he got Tag Games on the front of our away shirt, which was great, for him, good advertising for him. As a Rovers fan and the CEO of a games company, however, he started discussing with Laura, who's a commercial manager, and Tom Morgan, our commercial director, what he could do in return for the Rovers. And we talked about lots of ideas, bounced a lot of ideas back and forth. And he suggested, or they came up with this idea of creating this bespoke match day app for the Rovers. And the first version was very straightforward, very good. And then there was further developments and further revisions. And it's now what it is now, with two games you can play and interactivity on match days. Again, and it goes back to this thing that I was saying before. Don't be afraid to try something different. A lot of folk would have looked at that and thought, oh no, too risky, that would never work. Well, if you've got technical expertise and enthusiasm, then you can make things work that are a bit different. And I think it sets us apart from, almost every other club in Scotland in that respect. We're very happy, very proud of the Match Day app.
Yeah, no, rightly so. And as you said, I think there's maybe one or two that have started rolling out Match Day apps as well. But from the sounds of things, in the the thing there is that's came across this whole podcast for me is that the club has lent on the expertise of fans, and there's been plenty of them that have brought a different set of skills to the club that the club has utilised, and I think that's testament to both the support and the club to, as you said, recognise that let's try it and let's go and do it. Would that be your advice for clubs further down the pyramid? Because there'll be a lot of clubs and individuals looking at Raith Rovers and the work that the likes of yourself and all these other people are doing and going, you know, they're doing some really great stuff.
Yeah, I would say, what advice would you give? That's another endless answer, but I would say that other clubs, they should make use of social media more than they're already doing. It doesn't matter how much you're doing with social media, try and do a bit more. So at Raith Rovers, we've had fans from the other side of the world reconnect with us, as they're now able to see almost everything we do because we put it on social media. You know, it's not just the streaming of games live that they can watch. They look at Facebook every day and they see Q&As. They see links to interviews with manager and players and the chairman, you know, and all that sort of thing. So up your game on social media is the first point. The second bit, I would say that other clubs should try, encourage fans to volunteer. You'd be surprised at how many people want to help their own football club, but maybe held back from volunteering because, well, I've got no skills. There's nothing I can do for the Rovers. But that's not the case. Everyone has something to offer. And as I said, the third thing, and I said something I've said on a number of occasions already, don't be afraid to try things that might fail. At least you tried. And I think if you're seen to be trying things, then it's better. If you seem to be trying and failing, it's better than not trying at all. I would say that'd be the things I would say to other clubs at our level and above and beyond, above and below.
Neil, just to finish us off, who else do you look at for inspiration then when it comes to your content that you're trying to put together at the club?
I would say we don't look to one particular club for inspiration. We've taken inspiration from clubs at all levels of football in the UK and beyond. At Raith Rovers, we don't claim to have invented every single one of the things that we now do. So things like Wallpaper Wednesdays, where we share phone screensaver designs on social media, match day live streaming, text updates. A lot of these things were being done by other clubs before us. We don't claim to have invented the wheel. I think you've got to be confident enough to take on other clubs' ideas and make them your own without stealing the concept and claiming that you invented it from scratch. If we look at Raith TV and live streaming, I don't think I'd be wrong in saying that we looked at what Falkirk in particular were doing and saw that as the model of where we should be. And I think we are now in terms of the picture quality, editing, the commentary, the level of service. So I think without ripping Falkirk TV off, we took a lot of inspiration from them. And I mean, their commentators are a bit different from ours. So it's me and Davey Hancock that commentate for Raith TV. And we, at every game we commentate, we put out the caveat, we remind people that we are Rovers fans, but we got away not to be biased towards the Rovers. If we see something that's not good about the Rovers, we'll say that in polite terms. You know, we don't, at the same time, we don't diss the club or diss a player if he gets himself sent off or scores an own goal. We try and be as neutral as possible because with Raith TV, we know that it's mainly Rovers fans listening, but for every game that we broadcast, there's always a handful of supporters of the other club listening in because they couldn't get to the game. And the last thing they want is for us to be roaring, shouting the odds and giving our opinions over and above the actual action that they're seeing. We want them to enjoy the experience as much as a Rovers supporter. So, yeah, I think inspiration can be got from many different places, many different places.
No, definitely agree there. And I think it's great that I think something Michael's said quite often on the podcast is stealing with pride. And I think that definitely rings true with what you just mentioned there. Neil, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I think that was basically an hour-long love letter to Raith Rovers, and I really enjoyed listening to it.
Thanks for having me on, and enjoy the rest of lockdown, if that's possible.
Thank you. Yeah. Just remind us where people can find you. I know you're on Twitter.
So the club is on Twitter, at Raith Rovers. I'm on Twitter as NIALLRRFC. We've also got RaithRovers.net, the website, and we're also on Facebook and Instagram as at RaithRovers, I think is what they are. Yeah.
Perfect. Great. And again, thank you very much for coming on, and we will see you again next time.